So we've already had, in the first 2 weeks, we had over 350 people complete the program. And so we hope to have all the materials up by July. And so far, so good. And you never know what's going to happen with new programs. There have been, we've only had one technical glitch so far with one user. So this has been a major project, and it's finally come to life. So we do have a shield and like a little logo. We don't have a mascot or a fight song yet. So we're taking
all.
And
do you say it's approved by the Ohio Attorney General?
Yep,
the charity?
Yes. Oh, no, we're not. No, so.
No, answer's no.
We don't do approvals. What we say is you completed our program.
Right.
We say, you know, yay for them for taking the time, making the investment of energy to figure out how to better run their organizations in a sound and safe way.
So that is unique and interesting, and it'd be really interesting to see where that goes.
A lot of other states do a lot of good training and resource development online. I love stealing ideas from all of my colleagues across the country, and so in some states there may be a lot of other organizations that are performing this service.
Similar function, right?
Yes. In Ohio, that was not the case.
Right.
So there may be great groups where you live who are performing the same sorts of roles, but in Ohio, there wasn't. And so we're filling that gap.
So now, all of you who have relaxed and think, oh, gosh, the AG is so nice, we're going to hear from Yael about what's going on in New York.
That's not fair, is it?
Seriously.
I guess I'll take it. I'll take it. But I did want to say that I love this charitable university concept. And I'll use that also to make a plug for the guidance that is on the website of the New York Attorney General's office. We have a lot of great handbooks that are geared very often towards compliance with New York law. But as I attended a panel before lunch, it was a wonderful panel on organizational policies led by Darren Moore and Jeffrey Scher. And there was a lot of great discussion about conflict of interest policies and whistleblower policies and related party transactions. And in a state, you know, like Texas, where that's not in your code, right? It's not regulated. But all of you still have to create those policies and implement those policies and think about what should be in them. The New York law actually provides some shortcuts if you're thinking about how to craft a conflict of interest policy or a related party transaction policy. We did make the choice to make those things regulatory requirements, which you know you may or may not agree with that approach to regulation, but at the end of the day, they can provide some guidance. So if you're looking for, you know, how do I define a related party transaction, or what should be the steps of my whistleblower policy, that's actually baked into the New York not-for-profit corporation law, and we have guidance that's available to everybody on our website about implementing that. So I would just recommend that to you. There was also some discussion in that panel about how do organizations publicize their own internal policies. And there were a few organizations that said that they have training, internal training. And I'll just say from the point of view of the New York Attorney General's office, we are now really considering that kind of the necessary state of the art for policies. If you want to say that your organization takes conflicts of interest seriously, takes whistleblowing seriously, we're going to ask to see if there was training. We might even, and this is in the investigatory context, we might even ask to see the sign-in sheets. We might even, you know, ask who really attended, because very often, you know, the high-ups will come in, maybe sign the sign-in sheet, and then take off. You know, I think we've all been through trainings. Some are more useful than others. Some capture your attention more than others. I recently took a training. I think it was on, it might have been on like internal procurement and spending, but it was in a British accent, which I will just say made it so much more compelling. So that is not a regulatory requirement, but for you all who think about how to actually get the attention of your board members, of your staff when it's time to train them, I don't know. It was so elegant. So anyway, I want to highlight a few matters coming out of New York and certain trends in enforcement, at least from the New York perspective. The big headline, I think, coming out of New York is increased focus on governance. We continue to take action against sham charities and fraudulent solicitation. But there has been a shift to enforcement actions based on breaches of fiduciary duty, improper related party transactions, and failure to properly administer charitable assets. So I think what you're seeing is really you have your traditional kind of consumer protection oriented donor facing enforcement, where we want to make sure that donors aren't giving to sham charities. And we're continuing to do that, but we're supplementing it with this governance focus. And I know from our bureau chief really and the AG see that as a greater focus on the beneficiaries, right? Because at the end of the day, you want the charitable assets that are collected from generous donors to get to the right places. So Leslie mentioned that the NASCO annual report is in your materials. I commend that to you as well, and I hope from that and from the cases that I'll be talking about, I'm going to talk about four cases, time permitting, that you can see that